it's about the square root.
Okay, it's always a pleasure to have the opportunity to share some words of Torah with you. Usually when I come, I usually give more of a sicha than a shir, but I'd like to really take the time to learn something in depth, something that I hope will have a message at the end, but to really have an opportunity to learn something together. We've been waiting now for a month and a half, almost, for Purim. And Adar Aleph, it's a little bit of a tease, Adar Aleph, and we have to wait for Adar Beis in order to experience Purim. And we all know that Purim, one of the major themes of Purim, is the idea that we live in a world where God is hidden. We're not able to see the divine intervention. Sometimes if we look very hard, we're able to see small signs here and there. But we know that we live in a world where God is hidden, and it is incumbent upon us to seek out God, to look for Him. There's a famous story about the Kutzker when he was a young man, when he was a child. And somebody asked him and said, I'll give you $5, $10, whatever, kopecks, rubles. I'll give you a sum of money if you can tell me where God is in the world. And he looked back at him and he said, I'll give you double if you can tell me where God isn't. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists and that He's involved intimately in our lives. And yet, sometimes it's very hard to see that. Certainly when things are going well, when we're feeling it, so we see it a little bit more. Sometimes during a good davening, we're able to feel it. But many times, it's hard to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. And you know, there's the famous, also a famous parable of the man who, when he passes away, he sees his life as a seashore. He's shown by the ministering angel when he goes up to heaven. He's seen his life as a seashore. And he sees on the beach, he sees two sets of footprints. And the angel says to him, look, these footprints, these represent your life. And you see, you started here, you walked to here. And the man turns to the angel and he says, aha, I knew it. I knew there were times when God had left me alone, when I was forsaken, because look, there are many times when there's only one set of footsteps. And the angel chuckled at the man and he said, you fool, those aren't the times when God forgot you. Those are the times when He carried you. And we know that there are times when we feel God. We can feel Him tap us on the shoulder. We can feel Him standing right behind us. And there are times when we feel bereft of God's presence. And that's certainly the story of the Megillah. That's certainly the story of Purim, where Klal Yisrael felt for a moment, maybe God has forgotten us. Maybe this is the end. How many of us don't have beautiful visions of the life we want to live? All of the simcha we're going to have, family, spouse, family, success. And we believe, and we should believe, that God is invested in each one of us individually, and that He has high hopes for us. And then, if tragedy strikes, if we're in a tough situation, sometimes we have that feeling of, is this it? Is it over? Did I mistake the master plan here? And you can imagine what those Jews felt in Persia, living under the control of a foreign power, and realizing that the writing is on the wall, and it's all coming to an end. And the challenge that they had to look and to see God in their lives, even when things weren't going well. And we know how Hashem's name is physically, doesn't appear. It's bereft from the Megillah. And the message is just that you just need to scratch the surface sometimes to see God. You don't always see Him. It's interesting, even though we see the word Yud-Kei Vav-Kei sometimes in our Siddur, depending on what Siddur you use, sometimes just the little double Yud. We don't even pronounce God's name. We say the Lashon of Adnos, of Hashem is the Adon. And yet we know that there's so much more. There's so much more that that reflects. The Kavanah, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, the Kavanah you're supposed to have every time you daven, when you say Yud Kei, when you say Baruch Atah Hashem, you're supposed to have in mind the Kavanah of Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is HaYehoveh V'Yiyeh. Adnos, when you say Adonai, that means that God's my master. Yud Kei Vav Kei means that God is past, He's present, He's future, He's the totality of existence. That's the Kavanah you're supposed to have, even though we say the Lashon of Adnos. Because the essence of Hashem is something that is always right beyond our reach, something that we're trying to find, something we're trying to uncover. And we know that's the name of Esther. Esther, Milashon Hester. But the story in Remus Hadassah, not Esther. But Esther represents what the Megillah is all about. Even the Lashon Megillah, what does it mean? To be Megaleh. To reveal. The Megillah is a story that reveals God. And it's our mission to search for Him in the story, and ultimately in our own story, in the story of our lives. So I want to take a couple of minutes to understand a little bit, on a slightly deeper level, the idea of divine providence, the idea of Hashgacha Pratis, the idea that Hashem is intimately involved in our lives, because that's really what Purim and Adar is all about. That's the true simcha of Adar. That joy of recognition that God is with me all the time. So what is Hashgacha? What does it mean? The Ramban writes in the introduction, but also in his commentary on Eov, the Ramban writes that belief in Hashgacha Pratis, this idea of divine providence, belief in Hashgacha Pratis really means two things. It has two components to it. Component number one, something that I think we're probably all comfortable with, that God knows everything. God has a yediyah, He has knowledge of everything that exists and everything that goes on. But what's the second component of Hashgacha Pratis? This one's the one that's a little bit harder to swallow sometimes. Not only that God knows everything that's going on, that He's aware of existence, but that God is intimately involved with existence. You all, I'm sure, are familiar with that in the 1700s, 1800s, there were those who, it was a very popular belief, you know, the watchmaker theory, the clockmaker, the deists, the people who thought that God created a world, and then He took a step back and He observes. He's the great observer in heaven, but He's not actively involved in what goes on in the world. And here the Ramban comes and tells us, belief in Hashgacha, belief in divine providence means that God, number one, knows, but number two, cares and is involved. And if you think about it, rejection of the first is certainly a very problematic thing to believe. To believe that God doesn't know, that's something that we would refer to as kfira. That's heresy. What, God is not powerful enough? He's not all-knowing? Of course He knows what's going on in the world. To deny that is very egregious. But what about to deny that God's not involved in the world? You know, a person can deny that coming from a very frum place. What would be the logic of that? A person might say, who am I that God's going to be involved in my life? God is so holy. He's so transcendent. He's so great. And who am I? What am I? I'm a little person. I sin. I don't always act the way I should. Why should God pay attention to me? So a person can deny the second component of Hashgacha, that God's involved in our lives intimately, not because He's this big denier of God, but quite the opposite. Because he has a mistaken perception of how God works. God is too holy for little me. And we say in davening, it's really in Tehillim, we say it in Hallel all the time, we say something that goes completely against this mistaken perspective. What do we say? Mi ka Hashem Elokeinu hamagbihi lashaves. What does that mean, hamagbihi lashaves? He's great, he's magbi, he's up high. Lashavis, that's where he dwells up in heaven. And yet, what's the rest of that pasuk? Hamashpili liros bashamayim uva'aretz. He comes down here. He's mashpili, he comes down, and even though he's so high and so great, that doesn't prevent him from coming down into our world. That was Tfilas Chana. Chana said, Ein Right? Ein sor, what else? Ein kadosh l'Hashem. What do you mean there's no holiness like God? It means that God's holiness is completely unique from all other holiness. Normally, things that are holy can be defiled. If you take Shabbos and you do something on Shabbos that's not kifi, the kavod of Shabbos, you have desecrated and defiled Shabbos. If you take a karbon that was made kadosh, someone dedicates an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and then you do something chulin with it, something mundane with it, you have defiled its kedusha. But Hashem's kedusha, there's nothing like Hashem's kedusha, Chana says. That no matter how lowly we are, no matter how low the world is, Hashem is able to come down and interact with the world, and it doesn't touch His Kedusha at all. We actually say in Shmon Esrei as well, in Kedusha. What do we say? Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Hashem Tzvakos, Melo Chol Haaretz Kivodo. Even though He's Kadosh, and He's Kadosh, right? Why do we go up on our toes when we say Kadosh? Right? What's going on with that? We're reaching for heights. We're saying, God, I'm trying to get to you. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And in the Sifrei Kabbalah, they say that each Kadosh brings Hashem into a deeper dimension. In Kabbalistic literature, there's the Olam of Asiya, there's an Olam of Bria, there's an Olam of Atzilus. These are greater and deeper dimensions. And the idea of Kadosh is a recognition, God, I know you're there, and you're there, and you're there, you're higher, and yet, what do we then say? And yet, even though you're so transcendent, you're also so imminent. You're also so here. Even though you're there, you're here. And that mistaken perspective, if you don't understand that, if you don't understand what mi kashem elokeinu ha-magbil ha-shavas ha-mashpili liros ba-shamayim uva-aretz, so then a person can make the mistake of denying Hashgacha Pratis. And yet we know from Chazal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates here in the world. He's involved intimately in our lives. To what extent? We'll take a look at the Gemara in Chulin, the first source on the sheet. Amar Rav Chanina, Ein Adam Nokef Etzbo Milmata Elom Kein Machrizon Alav Milmala. A person doesn't stub his toe or jam his finger down here unless it's been Machrizon Shamayim. Wow. To what degree there's Hashgacha Pratis? Even a small little thing like jabbing your toe or jamming your finger. Gemara says if a person puts his hand in his pocket to pull out 3 coins and he only pulls out 2. All of this is divine providence. So Chazal clearly understood that the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being involved in our lives goes down to the very, very small detail. And the question I'd like to address is who? Who gets Hashgacha Pratis? Do we all get Hashgacha Pratis? To what extent is God involved in the world? So the Rambam is Rosh HaMedabrim in this issue. He's the first and the loudest voice. The Rambam notes that when you look all over Chazal, whenever there's a discussion about Hashgacha Pratis, it always focuses on humanity. Man gets Hashgacha Pratis. Man gets Hashgacha Pratis. And says the Rambam, take a look here in Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam first gives 3 or 4 different approaches to Hashgacha Pratis, and then the Rambam says, I'll tell you my approach. There's the view of Aristotle. There's the view of the Mutazilite Islamic philosophers. There's the Asharia, which are other Muslim philosophers. And then the Rambam says, I'll tell you the Torah's view. Ani amin shehashkoch elokis hi b'zeh ha'olam atachtam v'ishay min ha'adam levad. It's only by the human species. Aval shar balei chayim, but all other living creatures, v'kol shekein hatzmachim, and certainly vegetative life, the plant world. I don't believe, says the Rambam, that a leaf falls from a tree because of any divine providence over the leaf. What's that? What's an achbish? Anyone know? Spider, right, very good. And not that a specific spider is toreif, zeha zvuv, rips asunder a zvuv. What's a zvuv? A fly. B'gzeirah me'eis Hashem. I don't believe that God decreed that this spider is going to devour this specific fly. Now he gets really graphic. V'lo zeharok asher rokak oso ruvein. And not this, what's rok? Spit. That spits out of Ruvain's mouth. which is nonea, which it wafts in the air, it's floating through the air, ad shenafal zayitush, and it lands on a mosquito and drowns the mosquito. B'makom yuchad v'hargo. I don't think that that's b'gzeiros Hashem. There's no hashkacha pratis for mosquitoes, flies, and leaves, says the Rambam. Hashkacha pratis is reserved for mankind. The Sefer Achinuch also addresses this issue. He's talking here, I believe, about the mitzvah of tsaras, and saying how tsaras is a manifestation of tremendous hashkacha pratis. Can you imagine if every time you spoke Lashon Hara, your lips got sealed closed for 45 minutes? It would be quite an experience, and it would probably deter you from speaking Lashon Hara again too quickly. The idea that as soon as we speak Lashon Hara, we do something wrong, we break out in tsaras, is something that, even though we look at it, is a horrible thing. But it's something that reflects a very close relationship between us and God. And says the Sefer Achinuch, Mishar Shei HaMitzvah. The truth is, the Rambam, the Sefer Achinuch says it by that mitzvah as well. I think actually this quote might be from Shiluach HaKena, but I'm not sure. It's one of those two. Mishar Shei HaMitzvah, Likboa B'naf Shoseinu, to instill within us, Ki Ashkochas Hashem Pratis HaKol Echa V'Echa Mibnei Adam. Hashem wants to teach us that there's hashkacha pratis for each individual person. Yesh kitot b'nei adam. There are groups of people. Yachshivu ki hashkachas Hashem hu akol haminim b'frat. There are those who think mistakenly that Hashem has hashkacha over every species individually, whether it's people, oh, kol shar balichaim, or whether it's animals. V'yesh meim kitos yachshivu ki hashkachas Hashem al kol inyanei ha'olam. And there are those who think even more than that. Hashkacha is not only on people, but it's also on animals. It's even on plants. Bein balechayim, o kol shar devarim. Ad shiach shivu ki binfol ale achad min ha'ilan. To the degree that they think that when one leaf falls, it's a gezeir from Hashem. V'zed das rocho karbe min ha'seichel. But I don't think that this is true. And the Sefer Achinuch goes on, and he quotes other sources. Those who think that hashkacha is not for people. And he says, this is the das of the Kofrim. And then he tells us, V'anachnu balei dat ha'amitis. Those of us who have the true religion, true beliefs, lefi ma sheshamati, I'll tell you what I heard. Hu shenasim hashkachasu baruch hu al kol minei balechayim b'chlal. It's that Hashem looks over the world in general, but only by min ha'adam, Namin, do we believe that Hashkachas Hashem is al kol echad b'frat? V'chem kibalnu migdolenu. So here we have the classic traditional view amongst the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Sefer Achinuch, that Hashkacha pratis is only on human beings. It doesn't extend to animals and other creations. Now, there is an important caveat that I have to point out regarding if Hashkacha pratis applies to anything besides human beings. Based on what we've said so far, so let me just ask you a question. What would you say if a wild lion cub is running through a field on his way to attack a zebra, right? I think from the National Geographic movies, that's usually what the lion is chasing. He's chasing after some poor zebra. And he's running after the zebra, and the zebra starts to run. All the birds start to fly up out of the grass, and they're chasing across the plains. And all of a sudden, the lion cub trips, and he breaks his leg. And that's it, he's out of commission. So, would anyone say that that's hashkacha? That, wow, that zebra must have had some really good schuyos. Here, we had a lion, was about to attack him, and Hashem stepped in the last second. No, what would we say? We would say there was a rock, and the lion was very excited, he was very hungry, he didn't look carefully, and he tripped on the rock, because he's an animal. Okay. Let's say now it's a little bit less exciting. Now it's not a lion anymore. Now it's a cow. And the cow sees a really geschmack piece of grass. There's no zebra anymore. No meat. It's just a piece of grass. And he starts moving across the grass on his way to this really beautiful plant that he wants to eat, this nice grass patch. And here again, the cow trips and he breaks his leg. Hashkacha pratis? No. Clumsy cow. But let me ask you a question. What if it was your cow? And what if you have 7 children to feed? and you don't have so much money, and every morning you get your milk from the cow, and every morning you sell the cow's milk in the market, and with that you're able to eke out a living, and you're able to provide for your family, and now you know what happened? The cow, Elsie the cow, Elsie tripped, she broke her leg, she got an infection, and she died, unfortunately. So now what happened? Is that Hashgacha Pratis? I mean, it's a cow, it's not a person. If I was running after the grass, that would be Hashgacha Pratis, according to the Rambam. But what about the cow? Animals don't get Hashgacha Pratis, right? So what would you say? What would you say? Yes, Hashgacha Pratis, according to the Rambam, or not Hashgacha Pratis? Who says not Hashgacha Pratis? You say not Hashgacha Pratis, according to the Rambam.
According to the Rambam.
Okay, why?
Because in this situation, if you were to compare the... If in this situation of the cow, who, by way of whatever happened to the cow, it affects the family, according to the Rambam, this would be an example of God's hand being evident in the world in the way that it can affect human beings. So there's the human being in the world.
So you're saying that there is Hashgacha Pratis on the cow, then?
Not on the cow.
Okay, rather on?
On the person.
Ah, okay, good. Which is, I imagine, what everyone else is going to say when they raise their hand. Which, if I asked you, is there divine providence on the cow? Meaning, did God decree that something should happen to this specific cow? So, a lot of you are going to say yes. What's your name?
Leah.
Leah says no, but then Leah said with a thumb, on the homiletical thumb, she said, you know why it's no? Because it's really on the person, it's just on his cow. Like, let's give an example. If I'm walking around with $3,000 in my pocket, and I take out a tissue, and as I take out the tissue, accidentally the dollars fly out of the pocket, and they blow away in the wind, so you're going to say it's Hashgacha Pratis. What? Is Hashgacha Pratis on bills? What do you mean? I didn't fly away. The bills flew away. That's Hashgacha Pratis on bills? There's no Hashgacha Pratis on bills. Only on people. So what would you obviously say? No, but they're your bills. So that's what I think we're saying, Leah, right?
Yes.
That there's Hashgacha Pratis on the cow, but not because of the cow, but because the cow is owned by a human being. So that's an important caveat that we have to point out. Now how do I know that caveat? Because it seems to be very explicit in this Medrash. Look what the Medrash says, Bamidbar Rabba. Amar of Chanan de Tzipori, Rav Chanan of Tzipori said, Maisa ba'akrav echad. We're learning about lots of different bugs tonight. What's an akrav?
Scorpion.
There we go. That's right. Ma'isa be'akrav echad. Shehalach lasos shlichuso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was on his way to do a mission of God on the other side of a river. V'zimen lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu tzifardeya acha. So look at this. Look at this nice teamwork. So God worked out that a frog, a bullfrog, came bouncing by. Jeremiah came bouncing by at that second in the water. And just at that second, you know, the Akrav was sitting there. He needed to get to the other side of the river. He didn't know how to get over because the bridge was out. So how's the Akrav going to get to the other side of the river? So the bullfrog came over right at that moment. So he said, oh, perfect. So he jumped on the bullfrog's back, the Avar Aleh, and he brought him to the other side. The Halach also Akrav, and he went. And he finished his mission. He went and he was Akatis Adam Vames. And he went and he stung a human being that he was sent by God to sting, and the person died. So here, what do you see? Wow, what a Hashgacha. You know, that scorpion, as he was riding on the water on the back of that, he said, wow, what Hashgacha Pratis. I mean, I was gonna stand here all day. I had no way to get over this river, and you came over at the perfect time. Thank you very much. What amazing Hashgacha Pratis. But it's obviously not Hashgacha Pratis on the Akrav. Why did this Akrav need to get to the other side of the river? Because there was a mission that impacted humanity. And therefore, the man who was going to be stung had Hashgacha Pratis. In this situation, it wasn't good Hashgacha Pratis. But who knows, maybe this man was planning to kill somebody. And that person had tremendous Hashgacha Pratis just now. Because now he was saved. Because the person who was going to kill him got killed by the Akrav, who was helped over the river by the frog. So, what do we see in the Medrash? We see that sometimes there's divine providence over other things besides humans, but always why, Leah? What's the Leah principle here? That what? That if something is ultimately going to impact man, so it's all part of the greater cheshvan of Hashgacha Pratis. Okay, this is the opinion of the Rambam. I told you, we're doing a shir. So this is the first opinion. This is the shita of the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch. However, if you fast forward 1,000 years, This was the view that was in vogue for many, many years. Throughout the Tekufa of the Rishonim, this is what everybody held. All of a sudden, when we start reading Sifrei Kabbalah and Sifrei Chassidus, we start to get a very, very different perspective. The truth is, though, that many of those writers base themselves on another Medrash. This one's in Bereishis Rabbah. Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Rashbi, v'Rav Elazar Berei, and his son Rav Elazar, havu tamirin b'ma'arasa shalosh esrei shana. We know this story. Rav Shimon bar Yochai and his son Rav Elazar, they were hiding in a cave once for 13 years, b'yomid d'shmada, during a time of great persecution. L'sov shalosh esrei shnin, after 13 years, the language here is Aramaic, that's why it sounds a little bit different than Hebrew. L'sov shalosh esrei shnin, nafak yosiv al tara ma'arasa. They went out and they sat at the entrance to the cave. They weren't sure, is it time to come out or is it not time to come out? Chama, they saw chad tzayid koim v'tzayid tziporin. They saw a hunter, a trapper, and he was hunting birds. Now, Rav Shimon bar Yochai, after 13 years of meditation and learning in the cave, so he had a very good spiritual sense. So, Kadav Shomer Rav Shimon bas kala Amram in Shemaya Dimus Dimus. So Rav Shimon bar Yochai was, his antennas were able to pick up heavenly voices. And all of a sudden he heard a voice that said, Dimus, Dimus, which means free, free. And whenever he heard that voice, the birds that were coming close to the traps would get out. There was a gezeira coming out that they would be helped. Pascha. And he would saw that the birds would escape. But when he would hear a heavenly voice say, caught, captured, he would see that the birds would be caught. So basically, Rav Shimon bar Yochai was standing on the edge of the cave deciding, should I come out or not? And in front of his eyes, he was seeing a trapper trying to catch birds. And there was a divine play-by-play announcing what was going to happen right before it happened, decreeing what was going to happen on these birds. This one would be saved. This one would be caught. Omar, Rav Shimon bar Yochai was not only spiritually smart, he also had a good sense, philosophic sense, and he realized that there was a message here. Says Rav Shimon bar Yochai, Tzipor mi ba'al dei shemaya lo mitzdada, if a bird is not caught, unless it was decreed first from heaven, al achas kama v'kama nafesh debar nash, how much more so the life of man is decreed by God. This is the end of the Medrash. Just for the sake of time, I won't read them inside, but I gave you here a quote from the Vilna Gaon's commentary on the Zohar, and from Pritzadik, with Tzadok HaKohen, his Sefer on Chumash. So they both say the same thing. The reason I gave you both of them is I don't want you to think that this is just a Hasidic approach. We have the Vilna Gaon saying the same thing. It's an approach that's rooted much more in Kabbalah than it is in Hasidus. The Kabbalistic writers, based on this Medrash and other few other sources, argue that Hashgacha Pratis applies to everything in creation. Those views that the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch said are incorrect. So these are the views that are espoused by the Sifrei Kabbalah, based on this Medrash. This Medrash of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And sure enough, as we continue throughout Hasidic literature, we find this position being developed further and further. The Vilna Gaon argues, based on this Medrash, that animals get Hashgacha Pratis. Now, before we continue, I want to ask here to the room, Kahala Kadosh, if anyone, obviously, in the Chilas Kabod of the Vilna Gaon that we're even attempting to do this, but can anybody see a flaw in using this Medrash as a proof that animals get Hashgacha Pratis? Leah? You didn't realize what you're getting yourself into when you raised your hand before. Can anybody give a suggestion of why this Medrash might not be the best proof that animals get Hashgacha Pratis? Is your name in the back?
Adina.
Adina, yes.
There's human involvement.
Okay, why? What human involvement is there?
Because let's say that trapper needs food.
Oh, excellent. First of all, there's a trapper here. Excellent. This is not just like a random bird in the middle of the forest who's either getting caught by a lion or not getting caught by a lion. We're talking here about a human being who's hunting. And the fact that God is decreeing this bird yes, that bird no, this bird yes, certainly there's an issue here with the human being. Now, can anybody respond perhaps? Right? The argument that Adina's making is that this isn't hashgacha pratis on the birds. This is hashgacha pratis on the trapper. Your name?
Maybe you could argue, Racheli. Or maybe you could argue that, like, depending, like, which birds got...
Oh, very good. So Racheli would respond, perhaps, and say, yeah, but the hunter doesn't need this specific bird as opposed to that bird. He just needs birds. So what do you mean? Why would God should have decreed catch, catch, catch until it's enough times catching, or don't catch until the right time? What? Why is it sounded like it was bird specific here? Okay, so I could see that going back and forth. Is there another way, perhaps, to deflect the raya, the proof from this medrash?
After the other refutation of...
Yeah, besides that one, because that one, I think, as Racheli pointed out, I think you can discuss that one. I don't know if that one's a slam dunk rejection of the proof. Can anyone else reject the proof in a certain way? Hi, we know each other. Right?
Yeah.
Remind me again? Oh, right, Rachel. Okay, Questel.
Yes.
Yes, okay, hi.
You could argue that he was trying to see if he was going to leave the cave.
Oh, excellent. There was another human being. Very good, Rachel. There's another human being here who had a message that they needed to be taught. What was the other human being? Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. What was the message to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? Why did Rav Shimon Bar Yochai deduce from here that it was time to come out of the cave? What message was he given by God? The message to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was... You think you're trying to figure out, is it the right time to come out now? Am I going to get caught by the Romans? Am I not going to get caught by the Romans? Look, even specific birds only get caught based on my decrees. There's not going to be some chance, some accident that you get caught by the Romans. If you're meant to be caught by the Romans, you'll be caught by the Romans. And if you're not meant, if you're in the trap of the Romans, so I can free you from the trap of the Romans as well. So there was a very important message to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai going on in this story. And perhaps that's the reason why the birds were getting hashgacha pratis. Not because the birds got it because of themselves, but rather because there was an impact on humanity. As we continue in the Sifrei Chassidus, this perspective that there's hashgacha pratis not only on humans, but also on animals, is taken perhaps to the greatest extent. Let's see if we have a good example here. Look at the Sefer Simchas Yisrael. Pam achas holach harebi Rav Bunam Parshischa. Once the Rebbe Rav Bunam Parshischa was walking im chavraya kedisha with the holy guys, the holy chevra, l'tayel k'tzas al pnei asada. They were going for a stroll in the field. V'hitas atzma la'aretz. All of a sudden, in true Hasidic Rebbe form, what does he do? He throws himself down to the floor very dramatically, and he picks up gargir echad min achol. What does that mean? What's a gargir?
A blade of grass.
Close. It's like that. Min of chol. What's chol?
Sand.
One grain of sand. He picks up one grain of sand. V'higbi, and he picks it up. V'chazer v'nichol makom, and he puts it back down right in that spot. V'omar, and he says, mi she'eno mamin shagir ger chol zeh. Tzarech lios dafka b'makom zeh b'ashkacha pratis. Any one of you doesn't think that this grain of sand needs to be right here at this time, at this place? Hu bichlal apikores. Those are fighting words right there. He's an apikores. Who is Rav Simchon Bunam Parshischa seemingly calling and branding an apikores? The Rambam, Sefer Achinuch. Now this is very strange. First of all, I'll tell you that Rav Simchon Bunam Parshischa was not just any Hasidic Rebbe. He was actually a very renegade Hasidic Rebbe. You know why? Because he gave public shiurim on the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, on the greatest philosophic works. If we sometimes associate the Hasidim with Amunah Pshuta, with not getting involved in philosophy and the Rambam, he gave shiurim on the Rambam. He gave shiurim on Mor Nevuchim. Rav Simcha Bunam Parshischa was not an anti-Maimonist. He wasn't against the Rambam, Chas V'Shalom. So how can he say that everything has Hashgacha Pratis? Even sand, even the animals. What about the Rambam? What about the Sefer Achinuch? What about this idea that only humans? And what we emerge with here is a big, big machlokas. On the one hand, the Rishonim seemingly saying that Hashgacha Pratis only applies to human beings, and later writers of the Kabbalistic tradition and in the Hasidic tradition arguing that Hashgacha Pratis applies to everything in creation. So what I'd like to do with the time remaining, and we don't have much, not much at all, so I'd like to give you a perspective or two on how we can make shalom between these two perspectives. Is there any way to find common ground? It certainly can be that this is a machlokes, and we can end the shiur now. Two views, very interesting, two different views on Hashgacha Pratis. But I would like to begin to suggest some ways of reconciling these two opposing views. One of them draws on a theory that was developed only around 100 years ago, but as we'll see, it really has much deeper roots in our own literature. There was a man named Edward Norton Lawrence, and he coined the term that we might be familiar with from pop culture, the butterfly effect. What is the butterfly effect? So the butterfly effect is a term that is used in a field of research called chaos theory. What's chaos theory? Chaos theory is a theory about how small changes in very, very large systems are able to have tremendous impact. Why? Because seemingly, in a chaotic system, in a system that has myriad variables and many, many different influences that impact the outcome of that system, so many times small changes that sometimes seem unrelated can actually have a major impact on this very complex system. And the classic example, and that's why it's called the butterfly effect, is climate and temperatures, and basically climate. The system of the climate is so complex, impacted by so many things. A wind gust this way, a wind gust that way, hot air rising here, hot, colder air dropping in a different area. There's so many factors that impact weather, right? Even if we wanted to gauge the wind control in this room. So every time someone sneezes, every time somebody moves, that moves the air around. Now, we normally look at it as having a very limited impact. You know, if I go like this with my hand, so it makes a little bit of wind right around here. But the theory of chaos theory argues that when you have a system that's so large and so complex with so many variables, even the fluttering of a butterfly's wing in South America can impact the climate in Russia. Because there's so many factors that are at odds with each other, that are impacting on each other, the smallest little thing in one corner of the world can be the thing that tips the scales in another place in the world. It can cause a hurricane, can cause a tornado. And this is the idea of chaos theory. It's used a lot in the solar system to explain different movements in the solar system because of all the different factors that are involved. This is the idea of the butterfly effect. Now, if that's true in the physical world, that is so focused on the here and now. It's something that's even hard to believe in the physical world. When we generally interact with the world, you know, you're a little kid and you take a rock and you throw it into the lake. So what happens? It lands in the lake and those circles start to emerge. But eventually, the circles stop or you don't see them anymore. Now, if you stood with a measuring stick and you're able to measure the very edge of the water, there might be a slight raise in the water all the way on the edge because of that rock that you threw in. Certainly if you're on a rowboat and somebody flies by on their jet ski, so you feel the waves, you can see them going for a long time. But in the physical world, where seemingly things are right here, right now, you don't think that when I bang like this, this is actually impacting something down the block. But if that theory is true in the physical world, so al achas kama v'kama in a spiritual world that's not bound by physicality. Our world is bound by physicality. I can't run through a wall because I'm bound by the physical structure. We know that as things get more spiritual, they're able to go beyond the physical. So for instance, something that's more spiritual is speech. It's physical in the sense that it's waves in the air, but it's certainly less physical than my body. So I can't go through the wall. Gotta be careful. I can't go through the wall. Soon I won't be able to go through the wall. I can't go through the wall here. But my voice can. I can scream and someone can hear me on the other side. Certainly, and I don't want to get all mushy-mushy here, but certainly feelings, thoughts. I can think, I can't see my wife right now. She's not in the room. I can't see her, but I can think about her. I can see her in my I can see her in my mind because something like thought, I'll change it. I love my daughter. And right now, I can have feelings of love for my daughter even though she's not in the room because feelings are able to transcend the physical. That's something that we know. Feelings can transcend the physical. You can care for someone and think about someone who's no longer alive, even though they don't even have a physical existence anymore. Because things that are more spiritual are much, much deeper and much, much more powerful. So if the butterfly effect, if it's correct in the physical world, and the scientific community is still debating the butterfly effect, if it's really true, if the movement of and the flutter of a butterfly down in South America can impact the weather in Russia, in a physical world that's so bound by physicality, so then certainly spirituality is able to go deeper and go beyond the here and the now. And Rav Chaim Sanzer, the Sanzer Rov, the author of the Divrei Chaim, in three sentences, captures the butterfly effect in regards to Hashgacha Pratis and uses this to bridge the Rambam and the Sifrei Kabbalah. And says the Sanzer Rov literally in six or seven words. But if you, this is one of the beauties of uniting secular wisdom and Torah wisdom. If a person is aware of chaos theory, if a person's aware of the butterfly effect, so you, when you read these words of Rav Chaim Sanzer, it immediately starts to set off signals. You immediately start to realize what he's saying. Says the Sanzer Rov, it's true. Hashgacha Pratis is only on people. Not on any physical things. Not on the ground. Not on animals. But don't forget the Leia principle. Don't forget the caveat. That when something impacts mankind, so there is Hashgacha Pratis on it. Not for it, but for humanity. Says Rav Chaim Sanzer, everything Hashem created in the world, everything, every bird, every grain of sand, everything in creation was created by God. Why? In order to assist man in his mission in the world. Man's mission in the world is to come close to Hashem, to bring the message of God to the world, to be an Or LaGoyim, to bring the divine down into this world. And God gave us a huge, huge world in order to do that in. The world is the props, are the props. Everything in the world are the props that we need to use. The kalim, that's the term that Rav Dessler uses. The world is filled with all of the kalim, the vessels, the tools that we use in order to be mekadesh shem shamayim, to grow closer to God and to live godlier lives and to infuse the world with kedusha. That's why we're here. And says Rav Chaim Sanzer, that's why when you look in Kabbalistic literature, everything has divine providence. Because everything at its core impacts mankind. You might not know why. You might not be able to see it. If a tree falls in the middle of a forest, it makes a noise. You know why? Because everything that goes on in the world impacts mankind. We might not know why. We might not know why this grain of sand is important for mankind. But says Rav Chaim Sanzer, just like the butterfly effect, everything that happens impacts mankind in some way. And therefore, everything has Hashgacha Pratis, not for itself, but because of the impact that it has on man. There is another perspective, and I know I'm going to be a little bit over time, so I'm just going to take another 3, 4, 5 minutes just to give another perspective, which is very similar to what Rav Chaim Sanzer is saying, and I'm going to say it quickly, but I hope you'll be able to capture it because I think it has a very important take-home message for us. In a slightly different way to word this bridge between the two perspectives, I would say as follows. There's two different types of Hashgacha Pratis. There's two different types of divine providence. Why do we have divine providence? One of the reasons God gives us divine providence is to assist us in our mission here in the world. Hashem gives us siyata d'shmaya. He looks after us. He tries to help us. Help us achieve the goals that we're supposed to achieve here. And because of this, mankind is responded to by God. As we act in our lives, Hashem responds with schar v'onesh. Hashem relates to us directly because we have a mission. Not so with the animals. The animals were not created because their mission is to bring more godliness into the world. Hashem created the animals in order so that we can use them and the rest of the world to uplift the world, to bring the world to a greater place. The Kliyaka writes that every time a person eats meat, or eats any food, and makes a bracha on it, certainly if they eat it in the context of a mitzvah, so you have just taken that food and elevated it and allowed it to achieve its shlemus. Because the carrot doesn't come into the world to do chesed for other carrots. And therefore, when he gets the opportunity to do chesed, oh, now I'm a shalem carrot. The carrot is there in order so that I can make a bracha on it, so that I can have power, I can have nutrients, and I can go out, and I can do chesed, I can learn Torah, I can daven with kavana. So the whole world is there in order so that we can serve Hashem better and use it and elevate the world around us. So says the Ramchal that we are responded to because we have a mission. And when we do good, we get reward. When we do bad, Hashem punishes us. Animals also get hashkacha pratis, but not for their own sake, but in terms of how they are needed in order to help us with our mission. A cow will be decided if something happens to it, much like we said with the Leah caveat before, but because of its impact on mankind. And this, I think, is a very, very important perspective. And I think here we're even able to understand, you know, the Rambam writes that if a person disregards his mission in the world, he loses his hashkacha pratis. What does that mean? The Ramban says the same thing. He has a very, very harif lashon. The Ramban says that a person who doesn't dedicate his life to Torah and mitzvos and chesed and tefillah, so he's no different, listen to this, this is a very sharp line. He's no different than the donkey that he rides upon. It's a very intense line by the Ramban. What does he mean by that? He doesn't mean that the person's a donkey. What he means is, you've relegated yourself to the level of all of the kalim. There are actors, and there are kalim. When I speak to the guys, I'll give you a mashal that I use for them all the time that I think resonates with them, and I'm sure for the basketball players in the room, it'll resonate with you as well. The guys take this very personally, this example. But if a person is doing their mission, so that's it, you're a prime player. You're doing what you're supposed to do and you get hashkacha pratis. And why does the Rambam say that a person doesn't do what he's supposed to do, loses hashkacha pratis? Because you've been denigrated to the level of a kli. You're no longer doing your mission, so now you're going to be acted upon. Now you're just providing services, just like the animal provides service for the humans. So if you don't dedicate yourself to the mission for why you were here, so you're stripped of your status. You lose your special level because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So you're now just going to fade into the background. You're going to be the props for the people who are doing the things that they're supposed to be doing. A scary idea. The mashal I bring to the guys is if you're a really good basketball player, so sometimes the coach needs to speak to you, like he wants to work out a play. So what does he do? He looks down the bench and he says, oh, Leibowitz, and all the way at the end of the, come here. And he gets all excited, like, oh, I finally get him to go into the game. So he goes, all right, go in. So what should I do, coach? Just run around. Just you know, you're our fifth guy. Just go run around. So he finishes talking to the star, and then as soon as he's finished talking to the star, psst, good job. Go back to the bench. Pulls him off, and he puts the star player back in. Now, was there hashkacha pratis for that guy? There was. Coach looked down and he said, "Oh, he hasn't been in. I'll put him in." But why? Only because he needed to talk to the star player. It wasn't for him. There wasn't a play that was designed. That's not that you do a play. One guy's job is to get the ball and shoot it. That was never my job. My job was always like to stand there and block somebody so that the guy who's good can actually get the ball, right? So what's the idea here? I'm still in the play. If you see in the playbook, my name is there. I have a mission. But I'm not the key player. I'm just the props in order so that the key player can get the ball. And that, I think, is the true pshat, and I'll end with this, in the line in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that a person has to wake up every morning and say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. Bishvili Nivra Olam is not just, you know, part of the Happiness Society's, motto. I meant the one that he quoted, not the one, I wasn't pointing at Rabbi Goldsmith. I'm saying the Happiness Society. So it's not just, oh, every time you wake up in the morning, stretch your arms and say, God created the world for me. It's not just a happiness, like boosting up your self-esteem statement. It's much, much deeper than that. A person needs to say B'shvili Nivra'olam. You know what that means? It means you need to live your life in a way that you can actually look at your life and say, B'shvili Nivra'olam. I'm a key player. I'm receiving Hashgacha Pratis. I'm not an animal. I'm not a plant. I'm not a prop in the background. I'm actually doing why I'm here. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And that means I'm a key player. And that means I get Hashgacha Pratis because God is trying to encourage me to do my job, to continue with the mission. If you default on the mission, so the captain, the coach, he's not looking at you anymore. You slide into the background until you start taking on the mission again. But if I can look at my life and say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, so then that is the type of person that gets Hashgacha Pratis. And I'll end by connecting it back. I know I said I was going to end already twice, but this is really the last end. I'm going to end with connecting this back to the Simcha of Purim. Because if Purim is all about Hashgacha Pratis, how can I argue that and say Purim's not about Simcha? Purim's certainly about Simcha. But I want to tell you, that's the truest Simcha. And I'm telling you something that I hope you remember your whole life. Simcha is not gained by getting the nicest car and the nicest house and the nicest this and the nicest that. That's the marketing industry, the multi-billion dollar marketing industry's mission is to convince you that happiness is going to come from this and from that and from having the most prestigious job and the nicest cars and the nicest houses. Those are all nice. Those are important. It's important to be comfortable. But that's not our mission. Our mission is to serve Hashem, to be kind to one another, to make the world a better place, to bring more divinity into the world. That's why we're here. And that's also what's going to bring the greatest simcha. The greatest simcha is when you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not living my life in order to conform into other people's perspectives on what's important. I'm not chasing after things because society tells me that this is important. That's not going to bring simcha. You might laugh. It might be fun. But simcha is something that's much, much deeper. I believe actually in Greek, the same word that's used for simcha, for happiness, is the same word that's used for excellence. Simcha means to look at your life and to recognize that you're living excellently. To look at your life, look at your family, look at your job, look at the things that you're doing, and to say, this is why I'm here. I feel great because this is why I'm here. And I hope you've all had that feeling sometimes. Sometimes if there's something that you're good at, something that you've mastered, when you say, oh, this is why I'm here. So there's a tremendous feeling of inner simcha. You might not be laughing, but simcha doesn't mean to laugh. Simcha is an existential reality. It's about my existence. It's that feeling that, yes, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So Hashem should help all of us, that we should be cognizant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. We should be focused on that mission of why we're here. And ultimately, because of that, we should be able to experience the truest simcha and the realest simcha. Have a great Shabbos, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Rabbi Lipowitz, for